This is the Wonder Life Podcast, the voice for health and wellness. I'm your host, Andrea Ritter. Thank you for joining.
Microbiome Labs is revolutionizing the world of probiotics and gut restoration. And today, we are thrilled to be joined on the podcast by Kiran Krishnan, their founder and the man behind the science. If you are a licensed practitioner and you're interested in carrying the Microbiome Labs line of products in your practice, register for a free account in the link in the show notes. And if you are a patient or a retail client looking to order any of the Microbiome Labs products, you may visit the other link in the show notes to find a licensed practitioner near you who carries the Microbiome Labs line.
So I find what you're up to be seriously so fascinating. And I am not a practitioner. I'm not a doctor. I'm this super fan of all things that are so cutting edge and at the same time, super intuitive and maybe using ancient knowledge to bring forth your technology. I know it's not technology, but how do you describe what you created?
Yeah. So, you know, my saying always is that we're just smart enough to understand what nature has provided for us already and then utilizing it, you know, where we can't recreate the types of complexities and capabilities that nature has created for us over millions of years of evolution. So when we look at these microbes that we've discovered and we're working with and we're doing the clinical trials with, and we're trying to understand how they work even better every single day, when we look at what they can do in your body, it's really mind-boggling. You know, and I am a microbiologist, and I understand bacteria really well. And if you gave me 100 of the top microbiologists in the world an unlimited amount of money, we could never re-engineer these types of microbes, right? This is the beauty and the complexity of nature. So if you think about, here are bacteria that can exist in the outside environment, and then if you swallow them, they'll make it past this barrier system, this gastric barrier, that is designed to kill the vast majority of microorganisms that enter your body, but somehow they have developed a system to get by that. And then when they get in your gut, they can actually read the gut environment. You know, you've got hundreds of trillions of organisms in your gut. They can, you know, basically read that population, find problematic and overgrown bacteria, sit next to them, and bring down their growth. And at the same time, they can increase the growth of your good natural bacteria. So they can orchestrate this amazing change in this really complex population called the microbiome. And then when they orchestrate that change, you can see all of these clinical benefits, like in the case of leaky gut, or a most recent study in a dermatology study in the case of acne and inflammation in the skin, whether it's rheumatoid arthritis in your knees and the pain that you have in your joints. It's amazing when you rebalance the microbial population in the gut, all of the clinical effects that it has, and all you have to do is introduce these bacteria back into your system.
Oh my Lord. Like, you've said so much. I'm like, I'm rarely speechless, and I'm just like, oh my God, there's so many questions that I want to ask. Right. How did you even start this work? And you, okay, at Microbiome Labs, you guys use a spore-based cell. Like, what is it?
Yeah. So the way we even started this is, you know, I had a research company for most of my career in the nutritional supplement space. My focus was developing ingredient technologies and more so doing clinical research for companies and helping companies develop the scientific validation behind products and formulations. So we're completely behind the scenes people for about 15 years. And we actually got a project by a large multinational brand to study the probiotic market and then help them develop what would be considered the next generation of probiotics. So based on that project, I started really researching the probiotic industry, what was offered, you know, what is the scientific rationale behind how products are formulated. And this was about, you know, 12 years ago, 10 to 12 years ago. And some of the first things I did were very simplified. For example, I would go into a health food store and, you know, I would find out what they're recommending as the best probiotic. So I'd walk into a health food store and I'd ask the people working there and say, what are your best probiotics? And they would always point me to the stuff in the refrigerator, right? And I would question them and say, why is it in the refrigerator? You know, why isn't it sitting at the shelf in the store? And they'd say, well, you got to maintain live cultures because that's what makes them really effective. And so you got to keep them refrigerated. And then they would say, if you buy them, take them home and put them in the refrigerator. Don't leave them in your car for too long and so on. And then I'd question them and say, well, if they can't, you know, they're sitting on the store shelf. If they can't survive on the store shelf at 70 degrees, how can they survive at 98.6 degrees in the body? Right. And how do they make it past this gastric pH? You know, the pH in your stomach is so intense that if you were able to touch the stomach acid, the hydrochloric acid in your stomach, it would burn off the top layers of your skin on your finger.
Oh,
you know,
my.
That's how harsh it is. Right. And that's what that kills bacteria. It kills virtually most microorganisms that get swallowed. And so if these bacteria were so sensitive that they have to be refrigerated and shipped in special containers and put in special capsules and all this stuff, how is it going to survive through this harsh gauntlet that it has to get through in order to get to the site of action? So it was simple things like that that I started looking at that just started making it clear that there was a lot of gaps in the messaging around probiotics. And then the other thing I started delving into was this whole idea of how these products were dosed and formulated. You know, is it 17 strains that you need? Is it 29 strains? Is it 30 strains? Is it 200 billion, 100 billion, 50 billion? And when I started digging into the literature, I found no scientific rationale. And when I questioned companies who formulated these products, I found no scientific rationale behind how these products were formulated. At the end of the day, they're basically competing with each other on an arbitrary number that doesn't really make any difference, right?
Right.
So they're at 50 billion because their closest competitor is at 30, and they just want to make it sound like more and more potent and more valuable. I can tell you
so
this
is that actually in the bottle. Or are they just saying 50 billion because it sounds better?
So they're actually saying 50 billion. So they put in 50 billion in the capsule. But then the trick that the industry started doing was they come to find out that, you know, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months after production, that it was at half the amount of live cells or a quarter of the amount. So then what you'll notice on a lot of probiotic products still is the labels will say 50 billion at time of manufacturing. Meaning when they manufacture it, they put in 50 billion, but you have no idea what's there 6 months sitting on the shelf, right?
This is huge information.
Because you'll see it on probiotic products and food too.
So like, oh my Lord, like how can they even as a company, and these are, I'm assuming FDA regulated companies in a lot of cases, like how is this possible that they can be putting something on the shelf that is not necessarily accurate for the consumer?
Yeah, and that's the nuance, you know. So the FDA doesn't actively regulate most of these things. It's really kind of a self-regulated industry. FDA puts out compliance rules, the rules that you have to live by, and then it's up to you to live by the rules. Now, for the most part, the FDA does not have the personnel or the capability of going and inspecting and looking at products and making sure labels are accurate and all that. The thing that companies have really been suffering from is class action lawsuits. So lawyers have been picking up this opportunity to find products on the shelf, test them. If they don't match label claim, then they'll file a big class action lawsuit against the company. So a lot of what the companies started doing were to avert those kind of legal actions from lawyers. For example, Danone had to settle a $30 million lawsuit because of their yogurt and the probiotic claims that they make around their yogurt, which were inaccurate and not scientifically substantiated. You know, so there's a lot of nonsense in the industry. And looking at that, we actually asked the simple question, right? And again, you know, we kind of go back to the basics. Every time we start looking at things, people get caught up in these like ideas that sound good and you know, intuitively might make sense to them. But we just always go back to the basics when we're thinking about biology, when we're thinking about the body and science. Our basic question when it came to a probiotic was, where did our ancestors get their probiotics from, right? If probiotics have any sort of impact in the body, that kind of symbiotic relationship with us does not occur overnight. It does not occur over 100 years or 200 years. Those are relationships that occur over thousands of years. So if there are bacteria that, when consumed, can have a beneficial impact on the body, they're likely bacteria that our ancestors were inadvertently consuming as well. So we looked at, where did our ancestors get the biggest exposure to microbes in their day-to-day lives? And it was in, and it, the answer is easy, it's in the environment, right? Our ancestors didn't have refrigerated probiotics that they meticulously took between meals and so on. That's, those are all phenomenons of the last couple decades. But our ancestors did eat dirt, and they didn't sterilize their environment, and they didn't sterilize their food supply. So they got a lot of environmental bacteria into their system. So then our focus became, okay, are there environmental bacteria that can actually act as probiotics? Because again, just because you consume it doesn't mean it's a probiotic, right? Number one, it has to survive through this gauntlet that is designed to kill bacteria. Then when it gets into the gut, it has to be able to compete with the 100 trillion other bacteria that are there living in your inner ecology. And then if they can compete and take hold and live there, they have to be able to influence the other bacteria in a significant way that provides clinical benefit to the host. So all of these criteria are really important to verify before you can really call something a probiotic. And those were the criteria that we used, and we kind of honed in on these bacillus spores. And that's how we ended up with them. You know, and you asked the question, what is a spore? Well, these are really interesting organisms. So they live in the gut. They are normal human commensal organisms, but they can leave the gut through defecation. And when they're leaving the body, because they're leaving their natural environment and they're going into what would be a potentially harsh environment for them, which is the outside world, they wrap themselves in this protein armor-like coating. And because they're in this protein armor-like coating, that makes them impervious to all the things that would kill normal gut bacteria in the outside environment. Things like oxygen, for example. You know, most people don't realize that almost 99% of all the bacteria that live in your gut actually are extremely sensitive to oxygen. So the moment they are exposed to oxygen, they die off very quickly, you know. So these bacteria had to develop this capability of being able to come out and live in an oxygen environment for a period of time. And then when swallowed, they have to be able to survive through the harsh gastric environment. Again, this protein calcified armor-like coating protects them against that as well. And then when they get back into the gut, into the intestines, they break out of the shell and they go to work fixing your gut for you.
So I'm sure you've been asked this question. So do the spores come from real fecal matter?
Yes.
Okay.
So when they were originally isolated, so these were all developed by Royal Holloway, London University. They were isolated, you know, decades ago. And basically they were looking at fecal samples of loads and loads of healthy human volunteers. And they were looking for the types of spores that tend to live naturally in people's guts. So they isolated some of the most robust, prolific spores. And then once they isolated them, they've maintained the culture in the lab for decades. And we've been able to license that culture, and then we grow them for, through fermentation. Wow. So we don't, you know, the product that you find in the bottle. Yeah, we don't actually go and mine poop and look for spores in the poop. That would be a dirty job. But I'm sure you can find somebody to do it if you need to.
Yeah.
Right. But they were originally isolated from human volunteers, but we've been growing them in fermentation tanks to produce them.
So this is game changing.
Yeah.
Technology. I mean, it's truly revolutionary, and it is now, and it is going to, I mean, I can't even wait to see what you guys do next. So what have you found, like, from, you were talking about, you guys, you're running what, 11 trials right now, or 11?
Yeah. So we finished in the last year, we finished 5 clinical trials, and we've got, I think 9 or 10 more going on right now. So yeah, total of 16 trials were initiated or completed in over the last year. So, which is a leaps and bounds more than any other company in our space. You know, nobody in the probiotic space does this type of research work. There have been some companies in the past that have done that level of research, but when you look at all the products on the shelf, everything that you have access to, none of those products have, most of them have no clinical trials, not even one, let alone 15, 16 trials.
So what are you seeing as far as, you mentioned before leaky gut, you mentioned rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing with, and I'm assuming it's a prolonged use of the spore, the megaspore, and mm-hmm. probably some of the other products. What are you seeing as a result, and how much time, you know, because I think that's a big thing that, you know, there's such an opportunity to educate people, because one bottle's not going to heal your 45 years of life. So what do you suggest for people who might need to heal a leaky gut, and what sort of results are you seeing?
Yeah, so most of the studies we're doing are either 30-day studies or 90-day studies. Now, part of the reason we do it that way is the 30-day studies, we're looking to see what kind of rapid changes we can measure in individuals. And typically the 30-day studies are done in what we call healthy human volunteers, right? So the FDA requires that you do studies in healthy individuals if you are a supplement. It's hard to do a study in what would be considered a disease case if you're a supplement, because supplements are not supposed to treat diseases, right? So the way you can work around that is you do studies in healthy volunteers and you look and see what the impact is. And when I say healthy, it's FDA standards of healthy. When I describe some of the people that I'm talking about, you'll see how they're not actually healthy. But they don't have a defined chronic illness, right? And you're not trying to treat that illness. Now, then when we go into the more borderline or people that have certain verified risk factors for disease, then we tend to do 90-day studies to look at, you know, because not only do we want to see what the changes occur in 90 days, but we also want to see, is there an ebb and flow to it? Maybe there's a significant improvement in the first 30 days, but the next 30 days it dips down and, you know, and it plateaus or something like that, because the microbiome is complex and it's hard to predict what's going to happen. So we do 90-day versions of those studies in order to achieve that. So the very first study we did, which was published in August of 2017, was actually a landmark study in the probiotic space, and it was on leaky gut. So this was on healthy human volunteers is what they call them, but these are typically college students. They were average age of 21, 22. The reason why they're considered healthy human is because they're not obese, so they're not a BMI over 30, and none of them had any chronic conditions. So they're not being treated or medicated for any chronic conditions. They're your normal college kids. But we know when you get more into the space that all the stuff they do to themselves makes them not really very healthy at all. But what we did is we were screening them for severe leaky gut or severe toxic response to the process of eating food. And so we took about 100 students, and this was done with University of North Texas. We took about 100 students, screened them by giving them a high-fat, high-caloric meal. And then we look for leakiness in the gut. We're measuring toxins that are in the intestinal lumen now migrating past the intestinal lining and being found in the circulatory system. Then we're also looking at all of these inflammatory markers that go up significantly because those toxins are now in the circulatory system. So that is the method of leaky gut. The fancy name for that is metabolic endotoxemia, right? So metabolic endotoxemia is essentially leaky gut. So when we screened these college students, we found that about 55% of them had really severe leaky gut.
Wow, right? That's enough people.
That's a lot of people. And then you wouldn't think, because they're at the prime of their lives, they have no medical conditions or anything, you know, and but 55% of them had the type of severe leaky gut that has been shown by the American Diabetic Association, the NIH, and all of these big institutes to be the type of response that leads to most chronic illnesses.
Wow.
You know, so it's severe. And so the idea was, okay, let's take these individuals, put them on the probiotic for 30 days, and then see if just taking the probiotic for 30 days can significantly reduce their leakiness in their gut. And what we saw is just taking the probiotic for 30 days significantly reduced and almost eliminated the leaky gut.
Amen. I actually have felt like, seriously, I'm not just blowing smoke. I have felt a lot better since I taking the Megaspore.
Yeah, and a lot of people, expressed that in the study, even though they didn't have any specific disease condition that we were targeting. They have a lot of severe inflammation and toxicity. In fact, the researchers that did this study had previously published on this whole mechanism, and they showed that when you have that kind of leaky gut, it takes your body almost 2 weeks to recover from the inflammation and toxicity of a single meal, right?
So all those French fries I ate last week, I knew better. So,
yep. So but you're paying for it today and tomorrow.
And it really is, the French fry is really hard. But I mean, I knew what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
2 weeks. Oh my God.
It takes 2 weeks to recover from the toxicity and inflammation of one meal.
Oh,
and, but here's the beauty of it. After 30 days of taking the probiotic, they had no more toxic response to the meal. So it's building resilience. We're not saying this gives you the license to go out and eat French fries every day, but we are saying that if you do, it's not going to have the same toxic effect that it previously did. So this was a landmark study because no other probiotic had ever been shown to be able to alleviate leaky gut in clinical subjects, in human subjects. So we actually published it in a major gastroenterology journal called the World Journal of Gastrointestinal Pathophysiology. And they published it as what they call a pioneer a paper. It was a frontier paper is what they call it, which means that it's the first time anyone's ever shown this kind of clinical evidence. So that alone got us excited. We said, okay, if we can stop leaky gut, right, which is what we're doing with the spores, then all of these other benefits should be quite apparent because we know that leaky gut affects your skin. So it affects acne and rosacea. We know leaky gut affects your gums. There's a lot of studies that show that leaky gut plays a significant role in gum disease and periodontal disease. We know leaky gut is a major trigger for autoimmune disease. We know leaky gut is a big driver of obesity. We know leaky gut is a big driver of gut infections. So all of these other things we're now starting to study or have been studying since that leaky gut study. So one of the ones that we completed was a dermatology study, which was completed at the end of last year, also going through publication right now. What we saw was 30 days of taking the probiotic reduce acne lesion counts by 45%.
Oh, my Lord.
Right?
That's 45%. Insane.
That's absolutely insane. So the primary treatment for that kind of acne is Accutane, antibiotic, right? And in order for Accutane to achieve that same kind of 45% reduction, it's usually taken for 3 months. And this is a probiotic taken for 30 days, right? And we saw significant reduction in the sebum amount, which is the stuff you can squeeze out of your pores, which is a big part of how acne forms. We saw a significant improvement in skin hydration, a reduction in wrinkle appearance in 30 days. All of these amazing changes on your skin just taking an oral probiotic. Right. And then another recent study that we completed was on triglycerides. So when you have elevated triglycerides, which is a major marker for chronic illness like heart disease and diabetes, it's because your liver is undergoing a lot of stress and toxicity. And the liver undergoes a lot of stress and toxicity because the body is severely inflamed every time you eat. All of these toxins are migrating through and it becomes a job of the liver to try to neutralize them. And so we were able to show in a 90-day period about a 48% reduction in triglycerides in people with elevated triglycerides, which is huge. I mean, there's no prescription drug on the market that can do that. And the prescription fish oils reduce it by about 24%. So really, really significant. So we've got, I think it's now 10 or 11 other studies going on that looks at all of these other aspects, including a cancer study, which we're starting here at University of Southern Alabama sometime in the next couple of months, which is another really exciting area because if we can somehow improve the outcome of conventional cancer treatments by changing the microbiome, that really improves the survivability of thousands and thousands of people. you know, and this is a melanoma study, which is one of the most common cancers.
This is so amazing. I know I've used that word 1,000 times, but I just am like floored because really, I mean, it's the biggest game changer.
Yeah.
And it truly is fascinating to me. Why are you doing this? Why were you called to this place in your life?
Yeah. So, you know, we always say that Microbiome Labs is a company that just came out of a significant need. You know, if you asked me 7 years ago, you know, would Microbiome Labs exist? Would I have my own probiotic product on the market? I would tell you, you're crazy, because my whole career was based on being behind the scenes, helping companies with research and helping companies with the science. But when we went through that probiotic investigation, it became really apparent to me and to people that I was working with that there was very little science being utilized and brought to the market in the probiotic space. And being a microbiologist, I have a significant appreciation for bacteria, and I've studied and worked with bacteria in the research world for years. And, you know, I understood that bacteria can play a very significant role in our health outcomes. You know, they do so in a bad way and a good way. If you have the wrong type of bacteria, they can drive disease. If you have the right type of bacteria, they can drive health and wellness. So understanding that, it became really uncomfortable for me to exist in this market where bacteria have so much potential, but nobody's doing anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, so we had to. It was a calling. I mean, it's almost like, you know, something smacked you in the face and go, hey, this is your way of helping thousands of people.
Yeah.
You know, and so we had to do it.
I love that. And you haven't seen anything yet. Like this is just like the beginning of the fabulousness and helping people to achieve such a different level of health. So, you know, the whole microbiome thing, and obviously we have different microbiomes in our body. It is like, seriously, it's like the new kale. I mean, I've never heard people talk about microbiome so much, which is wonderful, but what do you think, why do you think it's such the conversation now? What is it that, you know, what's happening and why are we here?
So you know, to understand that, it's really important to put in proper context who we are, right? What are we? We're human beings, right? So we look at ourselves, our closest ancestors are chimpanzees, and we share like 95% of our DNA with chimpanzees. But that other 5%, is that what makes us so different and unique from chimpanzees? And how are we structured? What affects us in our lives? And as it turns out, we are a very complex ecology. Every part of our body is covered and loaded with microbes. All the old ideas that urine is sterile, our blood is sterile, our eyeballs are sterile, all of that is out the window now. We know that urine is not sterile. In fact, there are loads of bacteria that live in your bladder. We know that the blood is not sterile. You know, it used to be in the 90s, if they cultured your blood and found one bacteria, everyone in that room would freak out that this person's going to die of sepsis. Now we come to know that we've got about 1,000 bacteria cells per milliliter of blood. We all have about, you know, 5,000 milliliters of blood in our body. So we have a lot of bacteria swimming around in our blood. Our cerebral spinal fluid, right? This fluid that's in our spinal cord and in our brain, we always thought that was sterile because how would bacteria ever get there? Well, studies now show that that's loaded with viruses and bacteria. Even viruses like herpes simplex virus or papillomavirus, they're all in the cerebral spinal fluid. So there's nothing in us or on us or anywhere around us that's sterile. We are made up of microbes, and we are something called a holobiome. A holobiome is a superorganism, right? That's how a human is better defined. We are a walking, talking rainforest. Every inch of us, every millimeter of us is covered with a very complex ecology of thousands of microbes. And in order for us to function as a human, we need all of those microbes and all of those little mini ecologies to work together and communicate together to perpetuate the health and wellness of the whole. You know, so we're just starting to understand that. It is now estimated that more than 90% of all your day-to-day metabolic and chemical functions that your body does in order for you to be human is coded for by bacteria. not our own DNA, right? So all of these years that we've been studying the human body, studying medicine, studying science, we've been looking at less than 10% of ourselves. We are finally tapping into the other 90%, and that's why it's so exciting, because we're finally understanding what a human is.
That is beautiful. I am so thankful for your time and your brilliance and what you're doing for this planet and helping people to heal their bodies. And I'm just thrilled. I'm so thankful. So,
well, my pleasure. And thank you so much for the, you know, these kind of programs to me are so important, because I see the future of healthcare is going to be, you know, people being empowered with information about how their body works, how the world around them affects them, where diseases come from. We can't count on medical systems to take care of us, right? That's just not going to have good outcomes like it doesn't right now. And so these kind of programs and like the summits you do and all of that, that's such an important part of the overall outcome of everyone's health and wellness globally, you know, nationally, in our neighborhoods. So I'm always excited and honored to be able to participate in these types of programs where I can, you know, give people a little bit of information that helps change their mind and refocus how they think about themselves and how they treat themselves. You know, because now when you think of yourself as an ecology, right, you are a very complex garden. You're a very sensitive biology. All the things that we put in and on ourselves that could harm our biology has a lasting effect to lead us to chronic illness. You know, if you had a house plant, if you're somebody that loves plants in your house, people are very meticulous about making sure those plants are in the optimum environment for them to thrive, right? If it's a plant that requires direct sunlight, you're not going to put it in a closet somewhere, right? And if it's a plant that can't do direct sunlight and needs indirect sunlight, you would put it in a strategic location in your house where it gets indirect sunlight. You would never feed the plant too much water. You know that that's going to hurt it. You would never put your lotion and shampoos and all that in the pot of the plant because you know that stuff's going to kill it. You know, we have to think of ourselves as that same way. We are designed in a particular way, and we need to put ourselves back in the ideal environment in which we are designed to exist.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you so much, Karan. I just am thrilled and floored. And, you know, this has just been truly one of my favorite podcasts, and I love what you're up to. So we'll look forward to seeing
you. My pleasure. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.